All those farm animals with which we were, throughout recorded history, so close, have been taken away to be confined in large factories of sorts. These large factories are controlled by a very few powerful interests, and as those interests have a lot of money invested in those factories, they exert as much control as they possibly can over the marketplace. Given the amount of control these interests now exert, we pause to ask, will we be allowed to eat our neighbor's food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 770th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Easton Allen at the controls here at Broadcast Central. Hello, Easton.
Hello, Michael.
Folks, I'll bet you've heard this one before. To market, to buy a fat hog. Home again, jiggity jog. This rhyme was first recorded in the 1598 edition of The World of Words and traveled down through time with other sayings like pig in a poke to remind us of how close we once were to our food. But then along came modern times, and with it, consolidation and distance. Whereas a few decades ago, most people lived and owned the animals with which they would eat today, or they would eat. Today, those animals are likely owned by a very large corporation. And whereas people once lived with the animals they would eat, today those animals live in the confinement facilities of industry. And thus, the hamburger we eat in New York City may have come from an animal born in Montana, raised in Nebraska, fed out in Colorado, and processed in Illinois. Of course, modern times did not capture everybody and everything. There are still those who think locally and act independently, like the Jeffries family of Vermont's Sugar Mountain Farm, who are striving mightily to build an on-farm butcher shop. These independent farmers, however, like the Jeffries families, threaten the dominance of the powers that be, and so today they are being buried in an avalanche of rules and regulations that lead us to ask, will we be allowed to eat Sugar Mountain Farms pasture-fed, free-roaming, farm-processed foods? Well, who better to ask than Walter Jeffries himself? So, folks, let's travel to Topsham, Vermont, to meet the Jeffries family. Walter Jeffries, you there?
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks for joining us today. So, has the snow melted from your mountainside yet?
Mostly.
Mostly.
There's still some snow in the shadows.
Still snow in the shadows. What is your season there?
What do you mean?
When is your growing season there?
Usually I can plant in June and I'm safe.
So it's a short season.
Yes, very short.
Very short season. So I guess you have a good old-fashioned animal farm going there at Sugar Mountain Farm. Tell us about the farm, please.
Well, our primary thing is the pigs. We have pigs, sheep, chickens, ducks, geese, but the pigs are what bring home the bacon. We raise pigs on pasture, feeding pasture and hay plus dairy, and we also grow some pumpkins and sunflowers and other things like that. But the primary component of their diet is the pasture and then the dairy.
Mm-hmm.
We make deliveries around Vermont to stores, restaurants, and individuals weekly. And right now we drive all the way down to Massachusetts to get the slaughtering and butchering done.
Wow. Which is a huge expense, right? Driving your critters all that way to have them processed.
Yes. The processing uses up about 30 to 50% of our income.
Wow. And that's what Sugar Mountain Farms is trying to change by building their own on-farm butcher shop, right?
Correct, yep.
And, let me start the story of Sugar Mountain Farm by what I read in the newspaper. There in the Montpelier Times Argus. And it's the story of your daughter, Hope, age 8 years old, And she has a real job, which is taming the piglets.
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell the folks just exactly what we're talking about there?
Well, after the piglets are weaned at about age 6 weeks, they need to become used to people and used to being handled, used to having us walk among them, touch them, etc., so that we can then herd them out in the fields, we can manage them, and that way they're much calmer. And what Hope does is every morning she goes to the different age groups, what we call cohorts, which is a group of multiple litters, and she feeds them a little bit of bread or produce or something and sits there with them and pets them. And by doing that, it gets them used to being handled, interacting with people, etc.
So what we're talking about, Sugar Mountain Farms, is just about exactly the opposite of what conventional agriculture has developed for the swine industry, which are these giant factory farms. It's feedlots, right? You're just about exactly the opposite of that.
About as opposite as you can get.
So the notion of your eight-year-old daughter taming the piglets is just a mind-boggler for anybody who's actually looked at the modern industry. So it's just incredible. So you actually have your pigs roaming in the fields?
Mm-hmm. Yep. They have about 70 acres, and we do what's called managed rotational grazing. So they have a section that they are on, and then they move to the next section roughly a week apart, and then to the next section. Then they come back to a section after at least a month of rest time.
Mm-hmm. What do they eat in the fields besides everything?
All kinds of good stuff. Their favorite things are young tender grasses and clovers. They love burdock and thistle. They love raspberries and blackberries. The thorns don't seem to bother them in the slightest. They also will eat young trees, what's called regen. So the leaves and the twigs off of those. They're very good at clearing fields. The sheep plus the pigs are an excellent way of renovating fields.
And that's exactly what they like lawnmowers out there for you, right?
That's right. We don't have a lawnmower.
Mm-hmm. What about the protein sources, you know, in feedlots? They feed the pigs concentrated grains.
Well, what we did was we planted the what's called legumes, which consists of alfalfa and various clovers, and those are very good sources of protein. We also plant kale and rape, which are excellent sources of protein. And in the summer, we grow pumpkins, beets, mangoes, sunflowers, those kinds of things in what are their winter paddocks, so that by the time we get into fall, they're able to have those vegetables. And then the other big thing is the pasture tends to be low in one particular amino acid, and what we do is we get dairy from a nearby farm and butter and cheese maker, and in the process of making butter and cheese,
with cheese whey.
It takes whey.
Wow.
So that's left over. And instead of them putting it down the drain, which would be a waste and it would clog up the drain, what they do is they truck it over to us. We're just across the mountain from them.
Mm-hmm. And whey is one of the best natural sources of protein and the most digestible that we can get, right?
That's right. That's why bodybuilders like it so much.
Mm-hmm. And thus you have some very happy pigs, I think. Now, when you talk about them, I saw this picture of your, I think it must have been your wife and your daughter walking up the road, and all of the pigs were following them.
Yeah.
So you actually are out there in the field. You can actually go out there, and the pigs know you, and I guess you're part of the family, right?
Well, we train them to follow us, and that's part of what Hope is doing every morning. Is she's teaching them, and one of the things she does with them is she will lead them around their areas so that they follow her in order to get the treat, and they learn that following is a good thing. We also have a pack of livestock herding and guarding dogs, and they also work from very young age with the piglets at training the piglets to herd.
Huh. What kind of dogs do you use?
They're a mixed breed. They have a little bit of German Shepherd in them and a little bit of Black Lab and a lot of other. One of them showed up on our doorstep 20 years ago and said, I'm going to work on your farm. I said, go away.
I'm the new hired hand. Put me to work.
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to have some...
like that.
Yeah, folks, we're going to have some fun today where I'm taking you to way up to Vermont, Sugar Mountain Farm. Way up there in the mountains of... It is the mountains, too, isn't it, Walter?
Yep, we're literally up in the mountains. We're on Sugar Mountain.
On Sugar Mountain today to talk about farming the old-fashioned way with the Jeffries family. And Walter Jeffries has joined us, and you are invited to participate as well. If you'd like to, pick up your phone and join us today at 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. I am Michael Olson, and away we go.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, where did your breakfast come from today? Did it come from some giant factory in the Midwest where they feed their animals grains from a giant soybean plantation somewhere? Or did it come from Sugar Mountain Farms in Vermont where you could get pasture-fed, free-roaming, farm-processed foods? Holy smokes. How on earth do you keep track of all of those pigs running around in the pastures, Walter?
We do a monthly pig count. And so we go out and call all the pigs to us. And
they come, of course.
Yep, they come. And then my wife holds a clipboard and makes notes, and I call out to her the various things I want her to record. And then my sons will take what it's a Halloween spray paint, bright fuchsia pink, and they mark the pigs as I'm going around. And that way we evaluate who's in what stage of pregnancy or what stage of growth or health, et cetera.
And as you are a pasture-based operation, or quite literally some call it a grass farmer, are you kind of a follower of Joel Salatin?
I know.
Polyface Farm? I mean, he's another grass farmer, I guess, kind of famous around the country.
I know of him. I actually haven't read any of his books. It's something I probably should do.
Well, let's talk about what makes your animals different than animals that are forced to be, you know, raised in a factory confinement lot. They're free to roam. You keep them confined somehow. How do you confine them, keep them from just running off?
Well, first of all, there's an outer perimeter fence, and there's two things to it. One, there's a stone wall, and then there's electric wire just inside of that. And the pigs are very observant of electric fencing. They're pretty observant of stone walls. If they've got what they want inside the perimeter, they're not likely to press the edges. In addition to that, the outer perimeter is then subdivided up into major fields, and those are divided up into paddocks, all, again, with electric fencing. And what we do is we have the pigs go into one section and then the next section. And there's actually two herds. There's a north herd and a south herd.
And in moving the animals through the pastures, I guess what really made all of this possible was the electric fencing, right?
Oh, electric fencing is wonderful stuff.
And
the other thing that makes a big difference in life is 1-inch black plastic pipe.
For irrigation?
For getting the water from the springs higher up the mountain down to the series of water troughs all around the mountain.
So the pigs have a place to drink and whatnot all through the season, and you don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, PVC and electric fencing, and we're in business. Now, when you move the animals, you're actually working the ground too, aren't you? You're actually cultivating the crops growing in the fields.
Well, there's kind of two different phases. For the winter paddocks, it's like that. They are actually tilling the soil because they're on those areas for longer. If you keep pigs on an area for a longer time, then they do start rooting and they will till it up very nicely. And it, I never till with the tractor. I just use the pig's action. And then we can plant. We move the pigs off that area and we plant the squashes and pumpkins and things. But in terms of grazing during the warm seasons, if the pigs are moved before they start rooting, they do grazing because they're lazy. Why bother digging down deep when you can eat the food that's up on the top?
And if there's enough food on top, you're a happy pig.
Exactly.
Now, it seems like they're getting a varied diet, a tremendously varied diet when it gets right down to it. Pigs are omnivores, right?
Correct.
And so they're eating probably, I'd hate to be a little critter running around in those fields.
If they catch a mouse or a snake, they will eat it.
They will eat it, yeah. Pigs love them critters. So now compare that with the kind of diet, you know, an industrial pig might be forced to eat. It seems like they get industrial animals probably get a fairly balanced diet, but it's probably through supplements of various kinds, right? They're given a grain, and then they're supplemented with this and that.
Well, the commercial hog diet, which is something we don't use, is based on two primary things, soy and corn. And the original reason for this was that the farmers were growing too much of the grains out in the Midwest where they couldn't get the grains easily to the cities. And so what they were doing was they were corn feeding the pigs back in, this was the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. And then they would take the pigs and put them on the newly established railroads and take those pigs, you know, or the hams that they had produced, or the pork bellies, and this is where that whole concept of selling pork bellies came from. They'd take those to the cities.
So it's kind of like a way of concentrating the corn.
That's exactly what it is.
And getting it to the cities then. So the conventional pig out there is raised on corn and soybeans. And you don't use that. You are pure pasture. Now, is there any way of measuring the difference in the quality of meat between those two kinds of raising pigs?
Well, first thing, of course, is just tasting it. Well, what we do when we go to a new chef or a store manager where we want to have them carry our meat is we give them a sample of our meat and they try it. And they always come back and say that, wow, that was the best pork we've tasted, and how can we get it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is we're actually doing a quantitative analysis with a researcher at UVM on the fatty acids that are inside the pastured pork versus conventional pork right now. And when that research is completed, we'll know how much of the omega-3 fatty acids are in pastured versus in conventional pork.
Well, now, let's pick that up a little bit, because that is one of the great, I guess, bones people pick with factory-raised meats, is that one of the most vital nutrients of all, the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, it just does not come in that factory processing.
Yes, from the eating the grain produces a high level of the omega-6 fatty acids, whereas eating the plants and the chlorophyll produces a high level of the omega-3 fatty acids.
And I guess another one of the great conflicts about the factory is that the feeding the animals those high protein grains causes different kinds of bacteria to evolve in their stomachs, correct?
That's what I've read about regarding cows. I don't know how it is with pigs or not.
Okay, good. That's what I was curious about. And of course, you know, that's one of the big problems we're facing out here in the West is the E. coli 0157H7 that many people say are coming from the factory dairies and whatnot. And the stomachs are rumens, but pigs are not rumens. We probably don't have that problem then.
Yeah, they do more of their digestion in the intestine and in what on us is the appendix. They have a much larger appendix, and they use that for digesting plant matter.
And then the family is very much – tell us about your family. And you've got three kids and a wife, and everybody is involved in this enterprise, right?
Correct, yep.
Who does what?
Well, my wife handles all of the deliveries and the driving down to the butcher every week. In fact, she's out on deliveries right now. This week it was a three-day delivery day. Usually it's one day of deliveries plus one day of going down to the butcher.
Mm-hmm.
And then my sons help me out with just about everything out on the farm. And Hope, who's the youngest, she does things like playing with the pigs every day to tame them and sometimes helping with other stuff.
And everybody's involved, including Walter, who gets to do everything, right?
That's right.
Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're on the road to Sugar Mountain, Vermont, where the Sugar Mountain Farm, the Jeffries family is raising pigs, lots of other things as well. Not to mention all of the other animals that you have on the farm, and, of course, the most important crop of all, which are the children. You are invited to participate with your questions, 831-479-1080. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back out there. We're on the road today. We're all the way across country to Sugar Mountain, Vermont, east of Montpelier, way up in the foothills or in the mountains of Vermont, where the snow is still on the ground at Sugar Mountain Farm. And we're talking with Walter Jeffries, the proprietor of the farm and the head of the Jeffries family. And we're talking about raising hogs, and we're talking about the different kinds of hogs that are raised in the world, the kinds that we get from the big factories and the kinds that we get from the family farm. And Walter, you were mentioning the fact that you're doing a study with the University of Vermont to identify the difference between the omega-3s in your product and the omega-3s in the factory product. How are you making that evaluation?
Well, what the researcher's doing is taking samples of the fat and meat, and then she's now analyzing it, looking for the amount of omega-3 fatty acids and other fatty acids that is in the meat. And what we're doing is providing her with samples from every week's slaughter over a long period of time. We've been actually working on this for a whole year now.
Wow.
And the idea is to get a long-term study so that she can compare the winter versus the summer, and then she can also compare it against the ones that are bought in the store, that kind of thing.
So, do you have any preliminary observations?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Doggone. Okay, now if the results come out and they say, gosh, there's a lot more omega-3s in your meat, can you use that as a marketing device, as a marketing message?
Yes, we can. Once we have a scientific study, which is what she's working on, that proves one thing one way or the other, then we can say how much of the omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids are in the meat.
Mm-hmm.
We can't make health claims on it, but we can say how much.
How much. So that's, you can be very specific about that then.
Exactly.
Okay, good. We're going to go to the phones right now, folks. The phone numbers, if you'd like to join in today, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. And whoops, somehow I lost Walter. Perhaps Easton would be so kind as to get him back. I don't know what happened there, but I thought I had him locked. Sharon, You're in Vermont, too.
Hey, Michael, you know me. It's Sharon Zaccanelli.
Yes.
How are you?
Very good. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having my good friend Walter Jeffries on. Everything I know about raising pigs, I learned from him.
And you're raising them as well. Are you using the same kind of technology?
I don't have 70 acres, but I raise 2 pigs every year, and one for us and one for somebody else. And I do I smoke the hams and the bacons the old-fashioned way without any nitrites. And we have a smokehouse. And but we try to do as much pasture as we can and dairy, as much dairy as we can, and organic feed to the degree that we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walter, do you recognize Sharon's voice?
I certainly do.
Okay, good.
Hi, buddy. Hey, Michael, well, I was surprised that you didn't mention, and this was what inspired me to call, the soy and the corn that they feed out to CAFO pigs is all genetically modified.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm no scientist. But
now, only 97% of it is.
That makes CAFO?
It was supposed to be a joke, Sharon.
Oh, I gotcha.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm no scientist, but I'm a great observer of things, and I see that the way the health of people is on the decline has really started happening 10 years ago when GMOs really hit the market. And, you know, GMOs are just in everything now, and they are in those CAFO pigs. And you have to ask yourself, at Easter, when they had giant hams for 45 cents a pound, how did they do it?
Well, yeah. Cheap food isn't.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so that's the question we're trying to get to today. Exactly, what do we get when we have a ham from Sugar Mountain Farms, or when we get a ham from one of those CAFOs? What do you mean CAFO for those?
CAFO.
Yeah, CAFO.
Concentrated animal feeding operation.
And that's the industrial model for raising most animals these days, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, Sharon, I think the last time we talked, we were talking about the National Animal Identification System, right?
Right.
Where all animals on every farm would have to be identified and cataloged. And did you win that war?
Did we win that war, Walter?
Yes.
Well, it's a mixed bag. We backed down the USDA on their first attempt, and they said, well, we're going to force this off on the states and the tribes to enforce. And some of the states have done so, like Wisconsin. I think Michigan's got stuff in there. And other states have basically ignored it. And some states have sort of done it half-heartedly. And so it's kind of a checkerboard.
So the camel's nose is in the tent, right?
Yes, exactly.
And they put lipstick on a pig.
Well, now, I guess this leads me to the next point that I wanted to get to today, because in considering this program today and in a conversation with Walter Jeffries of Sugar Mountain Farm, just this week I had two pieces of really kind of bizarre news come across my desk. One is that here that in Michigan, a farmer at Michigan's Baker's Green Acres has a pig that the government doesn't like, and the government wants him to destroy all of his pigs.
Michael, if I may, actually, it's 200 farms that have heritage breeds, 2,000 farms, I beg your pardon, 2,000 farms that have heritage breeds, that the Department of Natural Resources has stepped over lines from the livestock that the state owns, which are birds and whatnot, into private private property. And the 200 CAFOs in Michigan, well, it doesn't matter that their pigs have curly tails or straight tails or upright.
So what's happening here is essentially is that the CAFOs feel threatened by the independent farmers.
Right.
And so have, you know, gone to government and had government pass a law that said only pigs of this kind may be allowed to be raised. So essentially, folks, what's going on is that the government wants these farmers to destroy their pigs because they're not the right color. they have too much hair, or they do not fit into the CAFO's definition of what a pig should be. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. It's all about greed.
And that's why it's so great that Walter has his slaughterhouse project going.
Well, and that's not the other story. The other story that I ran across was how Andrew Wards, a gentleman with an acre in Fulton County, Georgia, was actually bullied to death because he insisted on having the right to raise chickens in his backyard. And the government hounded him and hounded him and hounded him and finally hounded him to death. So when we get back from this break, I'd like to ask the both of you just how you are going about developing your little industries, your little enterprises, in this environment in which it seems like the powers that be just simply do not want you to be involved. 831-479-1080, right back. Well, folks, if you think about what you eat, you would probably like to think about eating some of the food from Sugar Mountain Farms in Vermont. Pasture-fed, free-roaming, just real live animals. And they're out there and eating the things of the bounties of nature and the things that have been planted for them. All living things. Wow. And yet, that does not seem to be the dominant direction of the food that is being taken these days. So we're asking the contrarians, Walter Jeffries, Sharon Zeccanelli, how on earth they plan to fit in this world of corporate conformity and run their operations and succeed. Walter, the things that you've been doing to manage and to develop this enterprise are truly incredible. And now you're looking at developing your own butcher shop. Tell us a little bit about why you're developing your butcher shop and the difference it will make for your enterprise.
Well, originally back in 2004, I started to investigate the issue because of there was all the publicity about the decline, the number of butchers, and I knew that butchering was a big part of our cost. However, I didn't intend to do anything about it until 2014. Unfortunately, in 2008, our butcher announced he was going to retire. And the backup butcher that we were also using said he was retiring too. About that same time, two other slaughter facilities burnt down. And then subsequently, another one was closed by the government for animal abuse problems. This kind of galvanized us. The week after having talked with our butcher about his retirement, Holly, my wife, and I met with the head of the Meat Quality Inspection Division, which are the equivalent of the USDA in Vermont, and we found out what it would take for us to open our own facility. And we were warned that there were a lot of regulatory issues, that it was very expensive, very difficult to do, et cetera. And they sent us home with about 3 inches of regulatory reading to do. And my next step was I met with the
Walter, USDA. Do you actually read them?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Well, it gets more interesting. I met with Dr. Azam, who was the head of the USDA in our region, and he sent me home with a box that was about 1 cubic foot filled with more regulations. And so my project from there through the next winter was to read all of those regulations and understand them. Simultaneously with this, I was working on getting all of our permits. And the state of Vermont has been very helpful. The USDA has been very helpful with this. The trick is reading the regulations, understanding the regulations, and understanding how they can be fitted into what you need to do. Simultaneously, you have to constantly be aware of laws that are being passed that would outlaw what you want to do. That's like the NACE thing, like what's going on in Michigan, et cetera. So on the one hand, you need to understand everything that's going on in the regulations, and on the other hand, you need to be aware of things that are coming at you that would become stumbling blocks.
And whereas you know, a corporation probably has legions of lawyers devoted to the task. Sugar Mountain Farm has Walter and Holly.
Yep. Now, I'm the regulation reader.
And so you looked at all these regulations, and undaunted, you continued?
Yep. Well, it wasn't a choice. It's something we absolutely had to have. It takes 10 months to go from breeding to butchering with a pig. And I need to know, for the security of our farm, for the security of our family, that if I breed a pig today, then in 10 months, I'm going to have a way of getting that meat to my customer's fork. And the only way to do that is to have it inspected. That's the law. I'm not going to fly under the radar, as some people do, because I stand to lose too much. I sell through stores and restaurants. I sell in large volume, and I'll get caught. And it's just not worth the risk.
So you have to know the rules. You have to know the regulations. You have to have a good relationship with the inspector, and you have to be true.
That's right.
Do you have to bribe anybody?
Nope. In fact, there's a $3,000 three-year term in prison for bribing. I should check that out.
Okay. And so now you're building an on-farm butcher shop. Now, will you also have the abattoir?
Yep. We're going to do it in phases. The first phase is to have the butchering, which is the meat cutting, and that's the most expensive part of the process. That costs us about $150 to $180 per pig. And first we need to get that under our control, get
and,
that.
And you've been learning how to do this yourself.
Yep, we spent 18 months, my wife, my son, my oldest son, and myself, with a master butcher. Oh, he's wonderful. And his name's Cole Ward. He's here in Vermont. It was a wonderful experience.
And you learned how to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was great.
So when we come back, we're going to ask you how the world is helping you build this butcher shop. Because I'll bet you're not getting the money from the Bank of America.
No, not at all.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about growing food in a different way, the old-fashioned way. And not everybody went all modern on us. There are some, like Sugar Mountain Farm, the Jeffries families up there in Vermont, who are doing it the old-fashioned way, probably with a lot of modern innovations on top of that old-fashioned way. And now they're building their own on-farm butcher shop, so they're going to be totally vertically integrated and be able to deliver their meat to you and us right from the farm. Wow. Do stay tuned. We're going to find out how to help them. Well, folks, it would be an impossible dream were you to go through a bank like the Bank of America. How do you finance the development of a vertically integrated hog farm on the slopes of a mountain in Vermont? Sugar Mountain, to be specific, and Sugar Mountain Farms is the farm. The Jeffries families are building a butcher shop and an abattoir, so they'll be able to do the whole thing, the raising of the pigs, the processing, and everything, and be able to send the farm fresh pork straight to your fork from their farm. But that's a lot of expense. How are you going to go about financing that, Walter?
Well, of course, first thing I did was go to banks. I borrowed hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 million from banks before and paid them all back and always been on good terms with banks. So I figured, you know, just go to the bank. And they all told me, almost without exception, the exact same words: we're not lending to new or expanding businesses at this time. This was 2008 when the economy tanked. The interesting part of that is that President had just given them all that money that they were supposed to be lending to stimulate the economy.
But they were supposed to be lending it to Walter Jeffries, but instead they were lending it to themselves.
Yeah. So that was an interesting experience. I spent 2 years trying to get loans. After we had done that for a while, we started turning to other things. We had about $30,000 of our own savings that we had been saving up to build a large greenhouse, and we applied all of that to buying concrete and wood for forms and things like that. In addition to that, we got loans from vendors. So these are people who sell us their product, and they gave us loans. Basically, what it was extended terms so that we wouldn't have to pay them back for a very long time. So when the butcher shop is up and running, they get paid back, and we're buying all the concrete and all of the other materials from them. And so in a low economy, it was an investment for them in a way of keeping their own businesses ticking along.
Oh, right.
And the next thing was doing CSA pre-buys, and this was our customers. What they did was they purchased a quarter pig, a half pig, a whole pig, or even a decade of pork, and they will get the meat when the butcher shop is up and running, and they paid us ahead of time. So that we were then able to use that money to buy rebar and concrete and insulation, all those good things that you need to build the building. And then the next thing after that was loans from family, friends, individuals who wanted to back our project. And the turnout from people has been just amazing. It's allowed us to push forward, however slowly. But 4 years is the typical amount of time that it takes to build a facility, and we're right on target in that way.
Tell us how people can help you.
Well, at this point, we're doing another fundraising drive to purchase equipment. We're just about to open the meat-cutting portion of the butcher shop.
Tell people how to get in touch with Kickstarter program on your website, because we're running out of time.
Okay.
I don't want people to miss this.
Okay. If they go to smf.me/K, so that's Sugar Mountain Farm, that would get them to the webpage for the Kickstarter project. And if they go to your website, foodchain.radio,
Metrofarm.com, too.
Okay.
That could find it there, too. Folks, go to Sugar Mountain Farm. Just Google Sugar Mountain Farm. You'll find it. He's got a Kickstarter program going there. You can help the Jeffries family build that dream. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.